Yeah, Arena speaking. So my name is Shuichi Murakami from University of Tokyo. So first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me an opportunity to present our recent work in this workshop. So yeah, as far as I understood, I was given 15 extra minutes because the two talks in this morning is both for Spinhor effects. So I will first of all, I would like to give some brief introduction of that Spinhor effect. So my collaborators are Professor Nagaosa and graduate students and postdocs Dr. Sugimoto, Dr. Sawada, and Dr. Onoda, and Dr. Onoda, and they are different person. also I am collaborating with Professor Shuchen Zhang in Stanford. So, yeah, first of all, I would like to give a very, very introductory one. But maybe by seeing the audience, I don't need to go into to detail. So, first of all, the Spinhor effect is an effect where external electric field induces a transverse spin current like this. So, applying an electric field, a spin current goes perpendicularly to the applied electric field, and usually the direction of the spin and the direction of the flow of the spin current are both perpendicular to the electric field. And this kind of effect has been known to occur extrinsically, namely by the impurity scattering. This is shown in this schematic figure. So if we consider the impurity here, and then the electron with spin approaches here, then from the carrier electrons, the electric field from this impurity is seen as a magnetic field. So by the relativistic effect. So by coupling this magnetic field with the spin, this scattering will have a left-right asymmetry. So this, schematically, it is like this. So it will give rise to the transverse pure spin current in the vertical direction in this figure. So on the other hand, intrinsic Spinhor effect, namely the Spinhor effect, which does not rely upon this impurity scattering, has been proposed by our group and also by the Texas group. So our group proposed the intrinsic Spinhor effect in p-type semiconductor, like a p-type gallium arsenide, like this, for three-dimensional bulk crystal. So we proposed this effect for the Luttinger model, which is written as this. I will give some more detailed explanation later. So the second one proposed by the Texas group is a two-dimensional n-type semiconducting heterostructure. So it is, a n-type gallium arsenide, but confined in an asymmetric well in the z direction. So by this asymmetric confinement in z direction, it gives rise to the so-called Rushbar coupling of the type like this, which is a manifestation of the spin orbit coupling. So for this Rushbar coupling, this intrinsic Spinhor effect has been proposed. So yeah, for later discussion, I will briefly introduce some semi-classical equation motion. Originally proposed by Sundaram and New in 1999. So this intrinsic Spinhor effect can be viewed as a manifestation of a wave phase in momentum space. So it is a multibound effect. Let me explain this more in detail. here. So the semi-classical equation motion is written as this. So where I set the external magnetic field to be zero, but only the external electric field is present. So in this equation motion, the usual semi-classical equation motion for the Boltzmann type transport theory is just like here, without this yellow term. But if we include the if we consider the wave packet motion in the multiband system, we should include this kind of term in this equation motion as proposed by these people. So, and what is this BK term? So this BK term is nothing but the Bayes phase in momentum space, just defined in this equation. So this BK is mathematically like a magnetic field, but it is in the momentum space. Namely, say, from the Bloch wave function U and K, which is a periodic part of the Bloch wave function like this, we can define the gauge field like this. From this AK, we can define the, this is not a connection, but the curvature. We can define the field strength or the curvature BK like this. So as usual, AK undergoes some gauge transformation, but this BK is gauge invariant here. So we know that this BK is fully determined by the Bloch wave function from this equation. So if we know Hamiltonian, we can calculate this AK and BK. We fully know what is the semi-classical equation motion for the wave packet. So yeah, as an exercise, we can take some simple example, which is the p-type semiconductor here. So for simplicity, we consider this Latinger Hamiltonian in the spherical approximation like this, where this S is a spin 3/2 matrix. So for this, let us calculate this B or A from this Hamiltonian. So it is a really a straightforward calculation. And to do that, we should first know what is the Bloch wave function for this Hamiltonian. So to calculate it, we know that this K dot S. So this term is diagonal, so we can neglect here, and we concentrate on this term. And to diagonalize this part, this we know that this helicity k dot s is a good quantum number. So for the helicity e equals to plus minus 3/2, it is a heavy Hall band. If it is a plus minus 1/2, it is a light Hall band. So from
so this is an approximate
exactly. Exactly. So we can some people have done the similar calculation for out of this spherical approximation, but and the result is of course quantitatively different, but qualitatively the same. So we can to capture physics, it is in fact sufficient for the present purpose. So from this kind of Hamiltonian, we can calculate this BK field in a very straightforward way. And in fact, this kind of calculation has been done first by Tony Z in 1988 in other contexts. But we can just borrow the result here. And then the result is just like this. So this lambda is a helicity quantum number. And this BKV is just like this. So it is just like a field which is radiated from the origin at k equals to zero. So this k equals to zero is a singularity here, but which is which reflects the fact that the band, this heavy Hall band and the light Hall band are degenerate at this energy. So we should note that if there's a band singularity, band degeneracy like this, then this Bay phase term, this BK term, will have a singularity, a divergence here. So by plugging this into this semi-classical equation motion, then the resulting motion is just like this. So so if we do not have this Bay phase term, then the motion is just like a straight line. The motion in the real space is just a straight line because this velocity is just k. It is just proportional to k, but when the electric field is applied perpendicular to this screen, then the component which is parallel to the screen is conserved. So in that sense, the real space trajectory without this Bay phase term is a straight line like this. So we're going just as straightly like this. But if we include this term, this is somewhat singular in this K. So it gives rise to some side jump or shift in the transverse direction like this. So it is this term is perpendicular to K, also to the electric field E. So the shift direction is just in the vertical direction like this. So and we also note that this term is odd in lambda, and this lambda is helicity, so it reflects the spin. So in that sense, this transverse shift is opposite for opposite direction of spin. So this is just like this. So the spin, this red arrow is a spin. So this spin goes upward, and the leftward spin goes downward like this. So this is almost like this. So if we so if the sample is just like this, then we see that if we apply the field in this direction, then the spin pointing right goes goes up, and the spin pointing left goes down. So it is exactly like the spin Hall effect which I explained before. So we can sum up the contribution of this spin current in a very straightforward way, and we can evaluate how much is the spin Hall, so-called spin Hall conductivity, which is a proportionality constant between the spin current and the applied electric field. So it is like just like this, and we can evaluate it, and it is as much as we can. Probably a measure in experiments. Okay, so yeah, of course, this is a very naive kind of calculation. We should of course consider some quantum corrections or MPT scattering or electron-electron interaction, etc., etc. So it is not. We should include many things, but as a first approximation, it captures the basic physics of the spin Hall effect. So, let me Yeah, as a brief review, I will also give some brief discussion on the n-type system, just like this. So in this Lashpa type Hamiltonian, these people calculated the spin hole conductivity from the Kubo formula. And for the calculation of the Kubo formula, we should give the spin current operator. So to define the spin current operator, they plugged in the symmetric product of the velocity and the spin. Then they obtained the spin hole conductivity, which is just a constant, which is independent of the spin orbit coupling lambda. And again, this kind of this spin hole effect in this system is it can be understood in a very physical picture like this. So in this Lashpa coupling, this term can be viewed as a Zeeman coupling, which is dependent on the wave number k. So in the equilibrium, due to this Zeeman k-dependent Zeeman coupling, the spin will be either pointing clockwise or counterclockwise, like in this picture in k space. But when the electric field is applied, things change in this figure. Namely, by applying the electric field, the Fermi surface will move along with the along to the direction of the electric field, just like shown in this figure. So, because of this shift of the Fermi surface, the spins will no longer be pointing to the this B direction, and they begin to precess around this B effective. So this the spin precession gives rise to the spin current, as we have been discussing, and by summing up all the spin current due to this spin precession, it gives exactly this E over 8 pi. So As a one particle problem, it is within some semi-classical level. The things are somewhat very simple. And in fact, the theories are becoming more and more in detail and somewhat more intricate. But before going to the detail in theories, let me briefly mention what is the experimental situation now. So for experiments, there are basically two groups involved. One is the the Santa Auschwitz group here, and they are doing the experiment in three-dimensional n-type sample. In their experiments, they set up the sample and apply the electric field along the along this direction. So this is the sample profile. And they apply the electric field to the vertical direction, and they measure the spin accumulation due by the Kerr effect. So by shining the linearly polarized light to the sample and measure the rotation of the polarization plane, then they can measure the spin accumulation. Yeah. So if there's a spin hole effect present, then by applying the electric field to the vertical direction, then the spin current will be induced in the horizontal direction. Then the they will accumulate at the edge of the sample, and so if they measure the spin accumulation by this method, then there will be a spin accumulation at two edges with the opposite direction of the spin. And the experimental result is just like this. So it is exactly the similar to what is expected from the spin-Hall effect. And it is considered to be extrinsic because in this setup, in their sample, the disorder broadening H bar over tau is much larger than the spin orbit splitting, which is very small in the three-dimensional end-up sample. So, it is considered to be mostly extrinsic due to the impedance scattering. So the other experiment is by
Question. And why you emphasize here the electric field direction? What about current? It's not like that. The current is more important than just geometry than electric field.
So the current is also flowing in this direction. There are only two electrodes up here and down here. And applied electric. This is the n-type, so the current is flowing upward.
So then this spin-dependent electron scattering is mainly due to the current which is flowing, or it's this electric field is more important, which is applied in this direction?
Well, in that sense, probably because it is mostly extrinsic, it is a current.
Moving of charges.
Moving charge will experience impedance scattering, and they will be deflected. So the other one is a two-dimensional p-type semiconductor measured by spin LED. So this. This group in Hitachi Cambridge, a group, they measured this spin hole, this spin current due to this spin hole effect by the spin LED type device, namely by recombining the spin polarized hole with the spin unpolarized electrons at the interface of the p-type and n-type semiconductor. If there's a spin hole effect present, then this recombination gives rise to the polarized light. So they measure the emitted, the circular polarization of the emitted light, and this is like this, and this just have the expected result as from the spin hole effect. So they consider it is a sign of the spin hole effect. And in this sample, the spin orbit coupling, the spin orbit splitting is much larger than the safe energy disorder broadening. So in this case, it is considered to be mostly intrinsic. And I should note that there are several papers estimating the spin current for these samples. And in fact, the evaluation is somewhat very difficult, and not so accurate estimation is possible because we don't know the details of the disorder and so on. But roughly speaking, the order of magnitude is somewhat the same. So probably this picture, namely this is extrinsic and this is intrinsic, is maybe correct, as many people consider. So let me move on to the several topics which are more or less unresolved and interesting. At present. So one is the disorder effect. So disorder effect is very important in this spin hole effect. So in the Rashba model, the initial paper proposes that it is E over 8 pi, but after that it is Yeah, this calculation involves only this single bear diagram. But after that, Gerrit and the collaborators give some calculation for the vertex corrections in this diagram, and it exactly cancels with this. So this is exactly zero. So it somewhat confuses many people whether the spin Hall effect is generally very fragile to impute it or not. So on the other hand, for the p-type,
in that calculation, when you address only the vertex direction, did they address the sidelines also?
You mean the self-energy correction?
Yes.
They included also the self-energy correction. I did not draw in this figure, but this is a full Green's function here. So they also address. And this is zero in the clean limit.
The
translation is not so obvious in this case. In this case, this is e over 8 pi, this is minus e over 60 pi, and so on. The summing up all the diagrams will translate. It is not a kind of world identity or something like that. So, on the other hand, for p-type, it is more robust. Namely, for this kind of vertex question, gives zero result for the delta functional impurity. So after that, several type of calculations have been done. For example, one of the most interesting one is done by Eugene and collaborators, which is on the Childish formalism. So by applying the electric field just like this, then they have shown by Childish type diffusion equations that in this setup, only at the vicinity of the electrode, there's a spin Hall effect, just like shown in this red arrows. The spin accumulation only occurs at the four corners of this sample, just like this. So at the bulk, namely in the middle of the sample, there's no spin Hall effect in the Rushba type sample. So there are several calculations. Yeah, there are many calculations on this subject, and some people have seen that this spin current as an anti-commutator between the velocity and the spin is in fact accidentally proportional to sy dot, namely the time derivative of sy. So in this case, because the spin current is sy dot. So because in the steady state the things are should be time independent. So this spin current is zero for steady state. But this is somewhat accidental for the Rushba model. We have done this calculation for the with the Childish formalism, and to make it rigorous. I will skip the details, but the result is that if the spin current itself or some operator is proportional to the time derivative of some other operator, then the expectation value of this operator is zero in the steady state. So, but this kind of translation comes from the this accidental relationship between because we have been defining the spin current as an anti-commutator between the velocity and the spin, but this is not. In fact, this kind of spin current definition is not unique and is not guaranteed. Namely, this kind of definition of the spin current it does not satisfy the equation of continuity. Namely, in this case, there's a spin orbit coupling, so spin is not conserved. So we cannot define the spin current in terms of the Netta's theorem. So this kind of spin current does not satisfy the equation of continuity, and so it is not directly related with spin accumulation. So to resolve this point, Chan Yu and collaborators give some other alternative definition for the spin current. Namely, in the presence of the spin non-conservation, the equation of continuity is just like this, with a source term in the right-hand side, like this. So this is a precession of the spin due to the spin orbit coupling. But in some cases, we can write it as the divergence of T, like this. So if we move this part to the left-hand side, then formally it can be written as an equation of continuity for spin, like this. With this is a conventional one, conventional spin current, but plus some extra term. So they defined this kind of this summation as a conserved spin current, and they have shown that this has some good properties, like say equation continuity and Onsaga reciprocity relationship, and this spin current also has the conjugate force. So. Yeah, and for this current, we have recently done the spin hole current calculation in this case. So in this calculation, we have shown that in contrast with the previous spin current. Definition, which gives exactly the zero result for the spin hole effect. This kind of new definition of the spin current, which is conserved, gives a finite result, just like this. Maybe I should show. So this is the spin hole conductivity with changing some parameters, like this. So it is non-zero. So in that sense, the Rushba model is some special model in which the conventional spin current is accidentally equal to Sy dot. But this does not capture the basic physics. Yeah, we consider this doesn't capture the basic physics of the spin hole effect in the Rushba model. And we consider that this conserved spin current more captures the physics of this model. And in this case, the spin hole effect is expected to be finite. So,
excuse me, yeah. I'm a little lost. You're saying that in the Rushba model, yeah. I cannot derive a proper spin current of
the
point?
No. Yeah, we can. Namely, the previous calculation concerns the conventional one, namely this JS. And this gives rise to exactly zero spin Hall effect. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, and by including this term, this gives a non-zero result. And we think it is more physical.
So it depends from the disorder, yeah? But
yes, yes.
Can you show another slide?
This is, yeah.
I think he was showing, yeah, for delta scatters, yeah, it's zero.
Yeah, this is zero. So in that sense, it depends on the impurity scattering. So it is extrinsic. And it is somewhat small. So in that sense, I expect that in the RASPA model, the spin Hall effect is small, and it depends on impurity scattering.
So what is this
big feeling? Please ignore this. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Please ignore this. Yeah, it is a kind of a non-local scattering.
So, but the observable spin accumulation of the spin current does have result any consequences for the spin accumulation?
Yeah, I will touch on this point later, but I think, they also discuss it, that this kind of spin current maybe corresponds to the very slow interface, as opposed to the very sharp interface. Yeah, this is about calculation. Of course, it is not straightforward to.
Can I ask? I think I understand what you mean, but the issue is what the boundary condition is.
Yes,
the current.
Yeah.
So with a smooth interface,
mm-hmm.
this particular definition, the claim is this current must vanish at the boundary. Is
that? This current. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
But that's not generally the case.
What do you mean?
Does the boundary condition depend on the nature of the?
Yeah, exactly. So in that sense, usually the experimental interface is very sharp, namely the potential is a kind of hard wall. But maybe this kind of spin current corresponds to very, very gradual interface. So for the more sharper interface, maybe of course as we show later, the spin attenuation crucially depends on the boundaries. So maybe we would like to interpret the spin attenuation as a sum of this kind of contribution plus boundary condition dependent term. That was
okay. Just to make sure I understand what you just said. So the current P can be thought of as like a polarization current. You
yeah.
actually have a surface to vacuum. The P has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Yes. Yeah, I should confess that there are several questions which are unresolved yet.
Second question I have, is an easier one. I mean, in general, if you try and make this definition,
uh-huh.
does the impurity potential itself enter the definition of the spin current?
No. But in the course of the calculation with a linear response, we include impurity scattering. Just as usual.
No, is a statement about the calculation or an exact statement about that?
Yeah, the definition of the spin current does not include any impurity scattering, just as a usual say current.
Well, I don't know, because the definition is that it's whatever object is inside the divergence in that equation. And if the impurity potential is included in the in the Hamiltonian spin orbit effects due to the impurity potential, maybe it can be in there, but
because B has a meaning of the torque.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you have impurity scattering, then you would have precessional spin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So non-considerational spin due to impurity scattering must enter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I get the point. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So, yeah, the next part, I'm which causes many in these papers is the spin Hall effect in insulators, especially the quantum spin Hall system, which has an edge state. There are many papers in these 2 years. So this quantum spin Hall system is the spin Hall effect. Is a insulator which has a spin Hall effect. But this is an insulator at the bulk, but it has a gapless edge state like this. So because we have been considering the time reversal invariant systems, the edge state should come in pairs, say like just like this, where the up spin goes say. Clockwise, and downspin comes anti-clockwise, just like this. So this is so-called the helical spin current or helical edge state. So for this spin current, we have been considering the to construct the so-called analog of the Streda formula. Just like considering the quantum Hall effect. So let me first review what is the Streda formula is. So Streda formula is a formula for the Hall conductivity, and Streda showed that the Hall conductivity is decomposed into two terms. One is the interband term, which involves only the states at the Fermi level, and the other is the interband term. And which involves the state below the Fermi level. So this first part is zero for insulator, whereas the this second part can be non-zero for insulator. And the second part has this kind of very simple term, namely the number of occupied state. Divided by the applied magnetic field at a fixed EF, like this. So this kind of formula can be very physically understood like this. So if we consider the system like this, and if we apply the magnetic field in this blue region, and assume that this magnetic field is proportional to T, then if this kind of derivative is non-zero, then by increasing this magnetic field, this number of electrons will flow into this blue region by fixing EF. So but from Maxwell equation, this increasing magnetic field induces this circulating electric field. So this ingoing electrons are nothing but Hall current, which is induced by this electric field. So in this physical picture, we can connect this Hall current and this applied electric field. So this proportionality constant is just sigma xy. So it is natural that this kind of sigma, this sigma xy is given by this kind of expression. So we can expect the similar things for the spin Hall effect. So for the spin Hall effect, this number n should be replaced by the spin. So this is just like this. So this B is the orbital magnetic field, and this is spin. So this is just like a usual susceptibility, but this connects the spin with orbital. So this so in this sense, this sigma s is related with susceptibility and reflects the strength of the spin of recoupling. So from there's an earlier attempt for the to construct this Schroeder formula for the spin Hall effect, and what they obtained is as follows. Namely, they obtained in the interband term and interband term. But the interband term has two terms. One is the expected term, but the other is something which is very complicated. And this is proportional to SZ dot. So it is it comes from the spin non-conservation. So it is a somewhat unwanted term from this physical picture explained, as I explained. But so I consider it might, this calculation uses this kind of conventional spin current. So instead, I use this conserved spin current to consider the Schroeder formula. And in fact, the result is as expected. So namely, the interband term is just simply as just like this, which is the susceptibility term, like this. So the next thing is to calculate this susceptibility for some known models of the spin Hall effect. So, for example, there's a model by Chen and Miri on the honeycomb lattice with a tight binding Hamiltonian. And this model has an edge state only in the middle part of this phase arm. The vertical and the horizontal direction, horizontal axis represent some parameter in this Hamiltonian. And in this middle region, there's a edge state, a helical edge state, whereas the outer region has no edge state. So it can be seen as in this band calculation. It is the band calculation on the on a infinity long strip, and in the inner region, this is just like this, which crosses the Fermi level, Fermi energy. But in the outer region, there's no state which crosses the Fermi energy. So by calculating the spin Hall conductivity by using this susceptibility formula, we obtain just like this. So this almost right wing region is the insulator region where there's no edge state. So it is almost the spin Hall conductivity is almost zero, and this blue region corresponds to the quantum spin Hall system where there's a helical edge state. And in this here the spin Hall conductivity is the quantization unit E over 4 pi times 2, and this 2 means the number of edge states because there are two pairs here. But in contrast with the quantum Hall system, there's some deviation from the E over 4 pi from exact quantization. Namely, there's some deviation here, for example. And this is enhanced near the phase boundary. And it is, in fact, interpreted as coming from the band crossing. Namely, if we approach the phase boundary, then this conduction band and the valence band will approach each other. Then this near band crossing gives rise to some divergent contribution here. So And in fact, this edge state is spin polarized, as we can easily see from numerical calculation. And by calculating the spin polarization of this edge state, the spin or conductivity is again similar. Again, is equal to these values. So from this analysis, we can consider some candidate materials for the quantum spin Hall effect. So far, maybe there are not so many promising candidates for quantum spin Hall systems. For example, for the honeycomb lattice model, as I mentioned before, maybe we can use graphene for this model. But as the graphene is made up of carbon, which is a very light atom, so the spin of coupling is very small. So maybe it is not so relevant probably. So on the other hand, I consider bismuth or the antimony of bismuth might be relevant. In this material, the bismuth is a semi-metal like this. But by doping antimony or by making it a thin film, the gap opens up like this. So there are several things by which I consider it to be relevant for a quantum spin Hall system. So one is the enhanced diamagnetic susceptibility in the insulating region, just like this. And also, there's a surface states, which shows a very large spin splitting, like this. So, yeah, it is a very busy diagram, but this shows that the bulk state is almost a gap. This region is a bulk state. So bulk states are very nearly gap, but surface state is deeply penetrated, has a very large spin splitting. So it reminds us of the quantum spin Hall systems. So yeah, I think this might be a good candidate. So and I'm doing some calculation on this line. So yeah, maybe yeah. There's some more things to say about the issue which some people ask me questions. So is spin Hall current observable or not? So because time is not so, time is pressing, maybe I should only skip and give only a brief account of that. So for this about this issue, there are many, for example, numerical analysis based on the Landau-Biotica formula plus the Keldysh type formalism. But maybe it is the issue of the next talk, so I will just skip this. And also, there are some attempts whether this spin current accumulated spin can be related with the spin current. And there's some paper saying that the conventional one, the conventional spin current, well agrees with the spin accumulation at the edge. But, and also other papers show that the, in contrast with this result, as I mentioned before, David and collaborators show that if we consider the four-terminal setup just like this, then the spin current is restored near the other electrodes. So it can be so. So maybe let me explain. So in this setup, there are only two electrodes, but by attaching two more electrodes to probe the spin current, then near this boundary, spin current will be restored, and the spin current will flow into this spin current probe, so it can be probably observed. So, and the other paper is a very recent one, and they show that the spin attenuation crucially depends on the nature of the boundary. So in that sense, it is still under debate whether whether the spin current can be related with the spin attenuation or not. So there are still unresolved questions regarding here. So, let me move on to the next topic. But before that, if you have any questions. So then, for the rest of my talk, I will switch to other topic, namely this spin Hall effect for light, namely the photon systems. So just as analogous to the electronic systems, we can expect similar things for light beams. So as the Berry phase physics is in principle a wave physics. So it is basically an interface of waves in wave packet. Namely, wave packet is composed of many slightly different wave numbers, namely k and k plus delta k. And they will interfere with each other, and which gives us the trajectory shift of a wave packet. So it should be common in every wave phenomena. And we can propose that this is also present in light beams. So we can consider the similar semi-classical equation motion for light. So this is like this. So light has a polarization degree of freedom. So we have three equations, the position and the wave number and the polarization state, like this. So this term and this term, it comes from the Berry phase. So if we do not have this term and this term, then we end up with these terms. And this is exactly the classical geometrical optics given by Fermat's principle. And this term comes from the Berry phase term. And this term is the polarization change due to Berry phase, as have been theoretically and experimentally observed in the optical fiber with torsion like this. So, and the other one, namely this term, is what corresponds to the Hall effect. So, namely, this is the trajectory change due to this Berry phase. So, let me analyze this equation in more detail. So I explained, this is a Berry phase term or anomalous velocity term. So to make this term manifest in physics, so we should make this k dot non-zero. So and in this case, k dot is like this. To make this k dot non-zero, there should be some modulation of the refractive index in the medium. Or on the other hand, or Or in other words, we can explain it as follows. Namely, for the Hall effect for electronic system, we can apply the electric field in the system. But because a photon has no charge, we cannot drive the photon by electric field. So instead, we should drive the photon by other means, namely by changing the refractive index in the medium. So by changing the refractive index in the medium, we can drive the photons and make this k dot non-zero. Oh, maybe it is not so well seen. But this is the so the simplest setup is just like this, where there's an interface here between two mediums with a refractive index n1 and n2, like this. And as Snell's law gives the rule for this transmission and reflection of light. In this case, at this interface, this k dot is pointing in this direction. Namely, k is changed along this direction. So, and by some explicit calculation, we can obtain this very phase term, just like this. So this is the opposite for left circular polar light and the right circular polar light, like this. So in this, by plugging this into this, we can say that as the k dot is pointing in this direction, so the anomalous velocity, this term, is this direction or pointing this direction or that direction, perpendicular to the screen. So it gives the transverse shift at this interface, refraction or reflection. So yeah, schematically this is like this. So this is somewhat shifted. Of course, the light beam is more wider, so it does not jump like this, but it just like shifts slightly. So this kind of shift is known as the Ampere shift. Which has been theoretically proposed in 1955 and experimentally confirmed in 1972, like this. And there's also a similar shift called a Goose-Henschen shift, which is a longitudinal shift like this. And this shift is different for S-polarized light or P-polarized light. And this shift, as I explained, is different for the opposite for right and left circular polarized light. But anyway, this shift is very, very small, of the order of wave number, wave length lambda. So let me move on to the calculation of the shift. So maybe it is not so easily resolved. But let us move on to the calculation of the shift. So this kind of semi-classical equation motion is can describe the gradual interface. So the interface is very gradual, namely the refractive index is very, very slowly changing at the interface. But in reality, the interface is very sharp, namely the refractive index abruptly changes. So this kind of semi-classical equation motion is not valid under this kind of sharp interface. But instead, we can have some different approach. Namely, we can use the symmetry principle, namely the conservation of the total angular momentum of light beam. So, like this. So this is the kind of orbital angular momentum. This is a spin angular momentum coming from the circular polarization of light. And in this kind of setup, if these the surface are normal, then there's a rotational symmetry around this z-axis. So this angular momentum is the component of the angular momentum is conserved due to rotational symmetry. So by assuming that JZ is conserved for reflected and transmitted light beam respectively, namely JZ for this light and this light and this light has the same angular momentum, then then we can calculate what is the shift. And it is and this M represents the polarization state. And this is identical with the calculation of the shift by Maxwell equation. So it is really identical with a very classical type equations. And we can see that this kind of angular momentum conservation for the individual photons for the Maxwell equation calculation and for the numerical simulation, and they all give identical results. And but anyway, this shift is very small. Namely, this is the fraction of lambda. The wave number, wavelength lambda, while the width of the beam is very, very huge, of tens or thousands of lambda. So the shift is anyway very small compared with the width of the beam. This is a classical, this is the experimental measurement by Amber in 1972. So to measure this tiny shift, he uses this kind of prism, and he accumulated 28 total reflection by just like this, and accumulated the shift, and the result is just like this. So for left saturated polarized light and right saturated polarized light, there is some shift. Namely, there is some deviation here in the horizontal line. This is the screen image. So there's some very tiny shift after 28 accumulation of total reflection. So anyway, it is a very, very tiny effect. Recently, there has been more refined results just like this. But anyway, it is a very tiny effect. But we propose that the other system, another system, namely in Hall effect, we know from condensed matter that periodic lattice periodicity enhances the Hall effect by order of magnitude. So we apply the same principle to the photon systems. So it is just the idea of the photonic crystals. Namely, by periodically modulating the refractive index, just like this, and maybe we can design the shift to be much larger. So, for example, for this kind of photonic crystal, where the these are refractive index. So the refractive index is periodically changed by this kind of setup. Then the propagating photons will have a band structure, which is called a photonic band structure. And the photonic band structure is calculated as this. So as I mentioned in the first part of my talk, the Bailey phase is enhanced when the bands come near in energy with each other. So there are some such kind of points like this. So we expect that this effect may be enhanced near this point. So this is a calculation of the Bayer phase. So just as expected, there are some singularity here, divergence here. So if we tune the wave number to be near this near these points, then the shift might be much larger. So the calculation with that is just like this. So this is the trajectory in the real space. So if we pinpoint these Brianzon corners where the bands are nearly degenerate, then the shift is very large. So this A is the periodicity of the photonic crystal, and which is comparable to the wavelength. So in that sense, this is like 30 times the wavelength. So as compared to the transverse shift in at the interface refraction, which was 0.1 times lambda, this is like 30 times lambda. So it is very much enhanced. So let me see. So in the vacuum case or the homogeneous medium, the Bayer phase is just 1 over k squared, which gives rise to shift which is very small. But for photonic crystals, we can evaluate for this kind of near-degenerate bands. And we can evaluate that the maximum shift of the beam is just like this, where this delta is the gap size, and V is the group velocity here. So if we more and more if we make the gap more and more smaller, then this becomes bigger, bigger and bigger. So it might be very enhanced. So let's see. How much time?
About
1 hour. Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Yeah, let me then touch on the other topic in maybe 2 minutes or so. So, yeah, as I mentioned, this the smallness of the gap will make the shift larger. So we can make we consider other systems like X-ray propagating in a crystal, but the crystal is slightly deformed, and as it is known that in the X-ray the gap let me see sorry in the X-ray the gap is very small. In the X-ray, the gap as compared with the bandwidth is of the order of 10 to the minus 6. So in that sense, we can expect that the Bayer phase effect is enhanced by the inverse of this factor. And we somewhat analytically analyzed the shift by this deformation. So without deformation, of course, the X-ray comes straight. But if there's a deformation, the x-ray will be the trajectory will be deflected accordingly. And we calculated the shift, and it is like this. So it has a factor omega over delta omega, and which is the ratio between the bandwidth of to the band gap. So it is like 10 to the 6. So it is very large. So we can think that this is another manifestation of the wave phase by making the gap very small. So this is the final slide of my talk, and I should say that in principle, in both in electronic systems and photonic systems, we can make this wave phase effect larger by designing the gap of the system very small. So thank you very much.
Calculations that Boris Zeldovich did about 5 or 6 years ago on.
Yeah.
You didn't mention that.
Is
this connected with, how does it relate to his work?
It is in principle the same.
It's the same?
Yeah. I mean, the underlying principle is the same. It is a wave phase. Yeah, as far as I remember, they considered a optical fiber. And the circular polarized light is propagating inside the fiber.
And they also did some stuff at interfaces with pulses of circular polarized.
Yeah.
Yes. Very similar. And I'm just wondering, is it the same or is there?
Yeah, it is the same. In that sense, it is a kind of rediscovery. But my emphasis is on the photonic crystals. It is a new one. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, I have to mention about that.
In your business talk, you have mentioned some business.
Yeah.
And you show some BD graph.
Yeah.
And what's the point of that graph? So is it compared to the Alpes experiment?
Yeah, this is this was the Alpes.
You showed some calculation and.
I didn't show any calculation. This one? This is a first principle calculation. Not mine. Yeah, this is a surface. This is a three-dimensional crystal, and two.
That calculation contains some edge. Thinking about the edge.
Yeah, it is a first principle calculation with half infinite three-dimensional crystal. Yeah, this is a surface state, the state which is local at the surface, two-dimensional surface.